And it's time for another episode of Dear Jane. Great to be here. I'm Scott Baker, and it's like I'm telling you what your name is. You are Marcy Little.
Oh, thanks for the reminder. And in case
it says that right there in the bottom, so I can't get lost.
Oh, yeah. Well, in case anyone else gets lost or confused or wants to know where they can find us again, before this episode even gets started, hit the like button wherever you're listening, follow, subscribe, whatever the platform that you're on prompts you to do so that you can follow this podcast and never miss an episode. Go ahead and do that and give us a follow on social media. We post clips from the episodes there. So if you ever don't have time to sit down and listen to the whole thing, or you're curious about what we're talking about, you can definitely listen to those and learn more about our awesome guests that we have on.
Yeah. And you know what else we need to say? We don't say this nearly enough, but we need to give a shout out to our producer, Kate.
Yes.
Kate Yule. She's fantastic. And then our editor, Jacob McCormick. Jacob's got a really easy job because we never screw up.
But we always say things perfectly the first time, every time. No right. Bloopers here.
Right. Who knows what graphic he's going to put up now to, you know, sort of make fun of that silly statement. But thank you very much to Kate and Jacob for their help on this. Very excited about today's episode. We are going to hear a very personal story from a woman who went through abortion. Sort of walks us through the reality of that and sort of the processing of that afterward. So very, very, very interesting conversation and excited to talk to Brittany here. But first, let's hear from our sponsor very quickly, Choose Life Express.
Choose Life Express is very quick, so it's appropriate that we are giving a quick plug to them. They help you out when you just don't have time to put together your own video or your own marketing creative assets. They have it all ready to go to help you commemorate and get the word out to your donors if you are in pro-life ministry on some of the most important dates around throughout the year. So around end of year, they have ready-made packets to go with videos, email templates, social media posts, things like that that you can use to connect with your donors. They have phenomenal ready-made marketing materials to go so you can communicate with your clients. Whoever it is that you need to reach through your pro-life ministry, Choose Life Express can help. Go check out their website, chooselifeexpress.com, to browse their library of videos and other products to help either enhance or to help you supplement what you're doing for marketing your organization.
So the aftermath of abortion, the emotional process, what is it like? What are the challenges? What can we as a movement do better? How easy is it for minors to get an abortion? All topics that we covered today, talking to Brittany Poppy here on Dear Jane. Brittany, thanks for joining us here today on Dear Jane. To get started, tell us a little bit about your abortion story and what got you so passionate about all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Scott and Marcy, for allowing me to come on and share. When I was 17 years old, I had kind of found myself in a relationship. It was a secret relationship with a boy that my mom had kind of forbidden me from dating. My mom was very fair. She had given this boy a fair chance, but it was just very clear that that was not a priority that I should be having in my life at that point. And instead of obeying that wish of hers, I decided to do so in secret. And after doing that for about a year, I had found myself in an unplanned pregnancy. So I was 17 years old, senior in high school, and I really was faced with this kind of decision on how do I continue to live this double life that I've really successfully lived. You know, my mom and family and my church thought I was one way, and my friends at school and my boyfriend at the time thought I was another way. And I didn't know what to do. And I had just kind of decided that I needed to believe this narrative that I'd heard, that what I had found myself in was a problem and there was a solution. And so I started to go online and search, can I still have an abortion if I'm a minor? And what I came across was surprising, I think, to some people, but that was that I absolutely could still have an abortion as a minor. And no, my mom did not need to know about it. Mm-hmm. And I live in North Dakota. I've lived here my whole life, basically. And in the city that I live in, at this time, our only freestanding clinic was in the same city that I lived in. And so that made it even easier. And I found the information on their website about this law called judicial bypass. And I'd never heard of this before, but essentially you as a minor can have an abortion. Your parents do not have to know about it. They don't have to consent to it. You sit before a judge and he asks you a few questions. He or she asks you a few questions and then signs off on the paper if he or she deems that you are able to move forward, which in most cases they do. And so that is what I decided to do. In my mind, I had my ticket to continuing to live in this secrecy, and it was all I could think about was my own self-preservation. And so that's exactly what I did. I called the facility and made that appointment, and they ushered me through that entire process fairly seamlessly. And that's why I'm talking to you today.
Wow. What kind of questions did the judge ask you in that bypass process? Were they like questions about your health, like history, anything like that?
I love that question. I actually don't know if I've been asked that question before. And when I look back, I don't know if I remember everything he asked me, but I do remember that it was very quick and very relaxed. I know I was super intimidated at the thought of having, I was a 17-year-old. I'd never been to court before. Mm-hmm. But I remember once he walked in, he was very calm and it wasn't intimidating anymore. I remember him asking me why I wanted to. And I had just said that I didn't feel as though my mom had my best interests at heart, which I know now was so incredibly false. And then I think he may have asked me if I felt like I knew I was making the right decision, something along that line to make sure I was coherent. But it was very quick. I do remember, though, I had worn my high school letterman's jacket. I was a violinist. And so I had a fine arts letter, and I was super proud and excited of that jacket. And I remember he had taken notice of my jacket, and at the end of the procedure, after he'd signed everything and given me the okay, he kind of paused, and he looked at me and asked me what my jacket was for. And I had told him that I played violin in orchestra, and he said to me, "I hope you never stop doing that." And it's so crazy to me thinking back, did he know what women psychologically go through after abortions? Because something I loved so much, I quickly, within a few months, was not playing my violin as much or didn't have as many goals surrounding my music as I had beforehand.
So let's talk about that a little bit. You go through with the procedure. Sort of walk us through the immediate aftermath, but then longer term, I mean, when does it start? When do you start to have regret? I mean, help us sort of understand that process.
Yeah, so I will say that my first feeling was a mix of numbness, but also relief, because I had thought, okay, this is now over and I don't have to think about this anymore. But while I had been waiting for the procedure, I was starting to feel that guilt over what I was about to do. And so it wasn't too much after I left that facility, after everything was over, that that guilt started to kind of fester within me.
Was your guilt not, I'm sorry to interrupt, but was your guilt, did you have a faith-based, or was that the source of your guilt, or help us understand that?
Yes. So I was raised Christian. And, you know, I had always been a good kid, what you think a good kid is. My parents didn't have to worry about where I was, what I was doing. And so I think the guilt was a mix of all of everything I had been doing, and then that really big thing that I knew was not the thing I should have done.
And so you start, you said you started feeling guilty, well, a little bit beforehand, but then mm-hmm. soon after?
Yes.
All right, yep. then what? Walk us through the rest.
Yeah, so about 2 months after my abortion, my mom did end up finding out about my secret relationship, and I had become kind of a runaway risk. So she took me to this runaway shelter in our city, and we worked through our problems with the counselor, and she didn't know quite yet, but after I had been there for about a week, she brought me home. And I just had this overwhelming feeling. I felt so sick and nervous, like I had to tell her about my abortion. And so I had hung on to this paper bag that they had given me at the clinic. I think it had like medication or something in it. It was empty at this point. And for some reason, I just couldn't throw it away. I think now I was probably tied to it because I had nothing. I didn't have an ultrasound picture, nothing about my child that I had lost. And so that paper bag had the logo of the facility on it. And that facility is independently owned. It's not one of the more well-known facilities, but I knew that my mom knew what that place was because it was only 2 blocks away from her office downtown. And so how I told her was I took that paper bag out of my nightstand and I handed it to her. And I just remember the look of confusion on her face. And she asked me if I was pregnant. And I just said, I'm not anymore. And the look of utter devastation on her face was just, I can't even describe it to you. Just complete and utter devastation and sadness at what I had done, at losing a grandchild. Never once anger. She didn't yell at me, but it really was very difficult in the days afterwards, just having her know what I had done. And I wish I could say that that was a point where I had started to, you know, come back to who I had been, but unfortunately that wasn't the case. I continued that relationship for that secret relationship I'd had for another year, but not so secretly anymore, and had really just kind of let go of all of the things that I love to do. Music, my grades fell. I could have graduated with honors, and I missed graduating from high school with honors because of how I had just completely let go of school. And while I did go off to college, my college years were just a lot of turmoil. I was pretty unhinged is kind of what I would describe it with my moods. Very lots of mood swings, tons of anger. Had to go to therapy for my anger problems and difficulty keeping relationships with friends, things like that.
When did you realize something's wrong, something's off, and like what was kind of your path to healing from that?
Yeah, so when I was in my mid-20s, I started to want to find my faith again. I wouldn't say that there was ever a point where I would have told somebody that I wasn't a Christian, but there are clearly times where I wasn't walking in that. But I had a desire to want to do that. And so I read this book called The Circle Maker by Mark Batterson. And it really helped me grow closer to God and grow in my prayer life. But I always felt like there was this kind of brick wall between God and I. And now I know that that was not a wall that he had built, but it was one that I had built because I just didn't understand his character at the time. But I was kind of just living like I was this good Christian girl, but I had a very deep, dark secret that I was afraid if anyone found out that I would be a complete fraud. So that I lived that way for about 4 years or so, 3 or 4 years or so. And in that time, got married to my now husband, and we found out we were having our first child. And about hours after my daughter was born, I experienced a postpartum hemorrhage. And it was very scary. I remember thinking in that moment, because I had been so worried that something was going to happen to her or to me during childbirth, out of basically punishment for what I had done in my past. So I remember thinking when that was happening that that was what the punishment that I had been waiting so long for. And I really didn't think I was going to go home. But thankfully, without too many interventions, I was recovered. And that put me in a extreme depression for many months, because I had felt like I deserved death and that my daughter deserved so much better than me. What if she found out what her mom had done and she's going to think that I don't love her, because how could I do that to another child? And so it took a long time. It actually, there's so much I could say, but I could probably talk about this for, you know, hours and hours. But it actually took me having another child after my daughter to really finally say, okay, I have to get help.
You know, it's interesting. It dawns on me listening to you. You know, a lot of times when we do something wrong, we know it's wrong. You know, we're told in the Bible, you know, try to make it right. You know, whether that's going to apologize to somebody, you know, if you can, try to make it right. For this particular act, that's hard to do, right? Yeah. So I wonder if that's part of the baggage or the emotions that have to be processed, because there is no really, hey, sorry about that. You think that's part of it, or should I quit the whole psychology game?
No, I totally agree with you on that. I have a really, I have a spiritual mentor in my life who talks about that. You know, when we go, if we were to go and shoplift, we could go pay restitution for that. We could bring that item back. We could go pay for it. We could apologize. When you take the life of a human being, there is really nothing that you can do to bring them back.
Yeah.
What's the biggest misconception that we have about women who have gone through this?
I do think that, and I think maybe the narrative has been changing a little bit. I think so much is fluid with this, especially in the last couple of years. But I do think that there sometimes is a stigma about what a woman is like who's had an abortion. Especially, and I don't mean this against the pro-life movement at all. I'm a part of the pro-life movement, so
we are less than perfect. We talk about that a lot.
Yes, but I do think that it's well-meaning in the conversation. But when we think about how many women have had abortions, it's 1 in 4 women, right? Well, I've had at least one abortion by the age of 45. And so when we think about in conversations out in the world with groups of people that we may not know much about their past, and we're saying things like, oh, what kind of woman could do something like that? Or that's so shameful for somebody to ever even think about doing that. And I'm not saying those statements necessarily are wrong, but I do think that it can be really hurtful for someone like me who lived with that secret for so long and hear someone say that and go, well, I sure hope they never find out about what I did, because they will not accept me.
What do women who have had abortions, what do they need in order to be able to heal?
Jesus. That's what I would say. I know that there are, you know, more secular healing programs, and they are great as well. But I would also say a trusted friend. I think so often when I'm in conversations with other women who have found healing, it was them going to one trusted friend first that was able to point them in the direction of healing. I know that's what I did. I went to a trusted mentor of mine who I knew had had an abortion, so I knew she would be safe, and she was able to help me find healing. So I would definitely say that trust and integrity would be really important for a woman to even be able to talk to somebody about that.
Thinking more about the pro-life movement and how we can do better, are you, now you've been out front, you've got a podcast, you're out front about your story. Mm-hmm. Are there ever times still, though, that you're reluctant to tell a certain person or a certain group the truth about your history?
Sometimes. You know, it's really hard to share the truth in a loving way. So sometimes when I've heard somebody share the truth and talk about what abortion is, but maybe use some of those stronger terms that I'm okay with, I feel like I've healed to a point where I'm able to understand that, yes, abortion is an act of murder. Murder is taking someone's life. But sometimes when I hear someone being very strong in that delivery and not necessarily talking about the healing aspect, I might be a little bit more reluctant to talk to them about what I have gone through because I don't want them to automatically attach that label to me. While that is something I have done, I know that God rewrites labels and changes stories. And so, yeah.
I want to jump back to, I know I asked about the judge earlier. And I know in some states now it's easier than in others for minors to get abortions, but how easy is it for minors to get abortions without their parents being involved at all?
It's a lot easier than I think people realize. So the state I live in, it, now since the Dobbs decision came out, we no longer have a freestanding facility in within our state lines. That facility actually moved across the river into Minnesota, which now in Minnesota, for example, there are no restrictions at all. I think we know that fairly well, considering what's going on right now. And it's even to a point where it's encouraged not to tell your parents. At the facility that I went to that's now moved across into Minnesota, on their website, it says explicitly, if you are a minor and do not have a parent involved, you will not pay a fee for your abortion. So, you know, I think back to when I did this, I had to meet before a judge. I had to come up with a lump sum of money. And I had to get myself called out of school. And now you hear stories of minors who will go to the school nurse or a school counselor, get a pass to get out of school, and they don't even necessarily need to meet before a judge. But even if they do, they're accompanied by someone either from the school or from the facility, and it's given to them for free.
Wow.
Well, and from my understanding, you know, it's not a real challenge to get an abortion pill sent to your house.
No.
Anymore.
Oh, either. No, I try to be careful in the language I use, because while North Dakota has no freestanding clinic right now, that doesn't mean abortion's not happening within our state.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what can, you know, I've heard several stories, and I have some close to me that are similar to yours, you know, a young person who finds themselves in this, they start to panic. They think, oh, my future is shot. There's no way my parents would ever accept this. What, especially in a faith-based, and some of the stories that I personally know are the same as yours. You know, they have faith-based parents, and boy, oh boy, they could just never handle this. Now that you've become a parent, although your child's young, what can parents do to sort of, I don't know if offset it or preempt it, or just if a parent's listening to this and they've got a daughter who might be of age, what advice could we give them to say, you know what, make sure the lines of communication are open with your daughter?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And I definitely don't claim to be an expert in parenting because my children are very little and I have so much to learn. But one thing I would definitely say is I would caution anybody from thinking that this couldn't happen to your child. If you would have asked my mom if I would ever have done something like this, straight A's, I mean, listened, she always knew where I was, or so she thought, she never in a million years would have thought I would do something like this. And so reminding yourself that you can still love your kids and recognize that something could happen. None of us is perfect. And just, you know, I don't blame what I thought my mom's reaction was going to be on, like, I don't blame that for my decision. I know that that was really my own self-preservation. But I do think that in some situations, kids are so afraid of the anger and the disappointment. And so I think just trying to be the one that your child is going to want to come to in any sort of crisis. And again, I am not a parenting expert, so I don't claim to know the perfect formula to be able to do that. But I think just being aware of what our kids are doing, you know, we live in an age where technology is readily at our fingertips. And, you know, I was going to bed with a computer and a smartphone in my room at night. I probably won't be letting my children do that because of just how much evil we have come to find is lurking with those things.
If you had the opportunity to speak to someone in your similar situation, a 17-year-old, a 16-year-old who is contemplating an abortion and feels like that's her only or her best option, what would your message to her be?
That it never goes away. It's something that will always follow you. And that child is going to be a part of you for the rest of your life, whether you give them life or not. And the best decision that you can make is to give them life. It's funny, when I was trying to figure out what to do, I kind of left this part out earlier, but I did go to our local Planned Parenthood to confirm that I was pregnant. And I had a nurse who I will tell you, I am certain she is probably not still working there, because when I told her that I wanted to have an abortion, she tried to talk me out of it. Mm-hmm. And I remember her words to me were, this specific Planned Parenthood did not do abortions at that time, but I remember her specifically pausing and looking at me and saying, when I'm looking at you right now, I'm looking at what I was when I was your age and I had an abortion, and I can tell you right now that it does not go away and it is not ever going to go away, and you don't have to do this.
So then it never goes away. How does the healing process progress over the years?
Yeah, so I've seen this analogy that I would say is true in a healthy grieving journey, where we kind of grow around grief. It never really gets smaller, but we grow around it and learn the tools to be able to deal with it. And while abortion is an extremely different child loss, it is a child loss in the same. You are still losing a child. And so grieving it as a loss instead of as some sort of event you went through can really help you have a breakthrough in your healing, especially if you're able to give your child an identity, a name, you know, recognize those anniversary dates. Maybe you're going to light a candle in remembrance of them on their would have been due date, things like that. Really personifying that life that isn't here and allowing yourself to miss them and allowing yourself permission to grieve them.
I think that's huge. I think a lot of people probably hesitate to start the healing journey because they know it's going to be hard, and even that journey itself will be painful, but it definitely sounds like it's worth it to go through that. And I love what you said too about just allowing yourself to miss the child. That really humanizes this whole this whole conversation that we have on a national level and political mm-hmm. level really humanizes the unborn in a really beautiful way.
Thank you very much for telling your story. It takes courage. Mm-hmm. I can just tell that it's never easy, is my assumption. And we've talked a lot of, you know, several people who have been courageous enough to share their story. And you help out other women in the process, don't you?
Yes, yes. So I will say that sharing my story really does heal another piece of my heart. That needs to be healed. Just knowing that someone might choose life because they heard my story, but they also might go seek healing. And I do help women heal. I do have my podcast, and that serves as an outlet to help women feel less alone. And then I also co-facilitate healing retreats. We do healing retreats in the state of North Dakota right now. And women have come, I mean, from all over to receive healing for their abortions through those retreats.
Is your podcast like ours? You get lots of fan mail, a lot of people loving it, great positive comments all the time. And
so many love notes. notes.
We would encourage people to check out Brittany's website. It's Brittany Poppe, and it's spelled P-O-P-P-E, BrittanyPoppe.com. And you can find out more about some of the resources she has, just encouragement. It's a great, great site. And follow you on all the socials and that sort of thing. Brittany, again, thank you very much for reaching out. Thanks for joining us here today on Dear Jane.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks again for listening to Dear Jane.
You can follow along every day on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and X. And make sure you also are subscribed so you never miss an episode on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, as well as YouTube. Ring that bell so you're notified and you never miss an episode.